Good morning. You're listening to WMFO. That's WMFO. WMFO in Medford, as one way of talking about that. We are also known as 91.5 FM, Tufts Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio. And we want to thank everyone for tuning in. And we are now about to switch formats a little bit. We're going to go to talk and music with a regular show, Socialist Alternative Radio, talk and music from a working-class democratic socialist perspective. And we have we're here every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Today's show we're going to be is co-hosted by myself, Jeff, and
Diego's
mic is not on. Hold on.
Four.
Go ahead, Diego. Yeah. Hey, all right. And we are here. Well, some of us are here. I'm here. And sometimes Diego, sometimes others. Every other week from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sundays, like I mentioned. And I'm just a little bit distracted here because we have things we need to do technically to get things going. And let's see. Hold on one second, please. I can't find that. Oh, well. Nope, that's not it. This really bothers me.
Welcome to the future, Jeff.
yeah. Well, those that know me know that I have my issues with technology, but at the same time, I am dealing with it all the time. I'm working, my job requires it, et cetera.
Don't feel bad. Einstein said the more advanced we become, the more disconnected we become.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find our basic thing here. There it is. There's too many tabs open. Oh, I already did this, and it's not showing. Okay. I don't get this at all. Okay. So, sorry about that, listeners. Today's show, we're going to be focusing on different topics, whatever comes up, but also, we're not just here for the current events. We're here for a deeper analysis and to get you involved in politics, hopefully. And politics meaning, socialist politics, revolutionary socialism, democratic socialism, different ways to describe that. And we are, I don't know what I'm doing here. This is just messed up. What can I tell you? And anyway, let's get started. Let's not bother with the technical problems anymore. And Diego, welcome back again. Glad you could do two shows in a row.
Yeah.
Brought in some books for us.
Book reviews here.
What do you got?
One that I talked about last week, and the guy's name was Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Right.
He wrote a book called Have Black Lives Ever Mattered?
Yep.
Put as a question. I'll do the review later on.
Whenever.
Also another one, biography of Frederick Engels, Marx's general, because he was he's one of the
theoreticians of Marxism, along with Marx. Yeah,
yeah.
Beginning, he got the analysis and organization of Marxism off the ground, along with Marx, and we also have we have been talking about in previous shows some reports on recent election results that on November 7th, including a socialist running in Minneapolis that we've been talking about, Ginger Jensen. We also have
I can't believe in Cambridge there are all these candidates from the right or left, mm-hmm. or so-called
yep.
left. I don't
yep.
even call them left because they're not really left.
No, they're liberals.
Liberals.
Yeah. Yep.
They're all running on the ticket of affordable housing in Cambridge.
Ah, too late. It's too late. The cow has left the barn, man.
You know, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, that's too bad.
How is that affordable? You know, it's like yeah. They couldn't even answer those questions.
I mean, there should be real fighting on that issue. Most of it took place a long time ago around rent control and around when gentrification started in Cambridge way back in the 80s, really. And Cambridge did manage to get a certain amount of public housing together. So there are actually, I know somebody living in public housing, for example, in Cambridge, and the way they've done it in some parts of Cambridge is they've sprinkled in the public housing among, you know, private housing. There are some places in Cambridge where you have the big obvious projects, you know, but there are other places where it's mixed in, and
they got all these rules, the Cambridge Housing Authority. But you can't smoke within 200 yards. They always like amp it up. You just go like across the next city or something and smoke.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that I'm a smoker. You know what I mean?
I know.
But you know, you should have that. Hey, I'm in my own house. I'm paying the rent or whatever it is. But no, they figure you're on a voucher. You're not paying it. You know, you're basically living off the this old, either whether it's liberal or Republican.
That's
right.
That stuff's kind of new.
They always do this. Oh well, you're living off the government, so you know you should just follow the rules, and that's that.
Haha. Yeah. Well, Section 8 doesn't mean you're living entirely off the government, by the way.
Yeah.
And you're still paying. Section 8 is the state term for subsidies for
rent. They give
you
a voucher.
Yeah, but there's huge waiting lines for that. It doesn't really solve the problem. There's still tons of homelessness in Cambridge, Boston, greater Boston. Yeah. No, I mean, what would have to happen in Cambridge now for a real fight on housing would be to have a new political party, independent of Democrats, Republicans. Republicans aren't a factor in Cambridge, so the Democrats do all the stuff that we're talking about, let all the stuff happen that we're talking about. So what has to happen is a new political party, and that party should fight for rent control again, should fight for more public housing, taking over existing private housing and turning into public housing, building and having the city itself as a public works program build housing under union wages and benefits. Sorry, what were you going
to
say?
Oh, it's like that place right up the street where you where you work, Bishop Allen Street, that vacant...
They're working on that now. Did you see it?
No.
I don't know what the deal is.
But
it's
like,
years. It took years.
That
took
is
years.
A beautiful place.
Yeah.
How many families can literally, like, I count at least 100 or more.
Yeah. It took years for that place to get emptied out and then stayed empty for a long time. And it had so many units in it. It was huge. And it's in a good location.
It's right by the Prospect Street.
Yeah. Right by the YWCA there
right
in Cambridge.
Right by Holchek's.
Yeah.
Whole Amazon check.
Yeah, Whole Amazon. I was in Whole Amazon to buy a few items yesterday. And
salmon, no?
No. I bought organic lettuce and these Indian food things that you could just heat up by boiling, like lentils.
Oh, yes, I know.
That's a whole lunch for me. I mean, it's $3, which is expensive, $3.49. But that'll last me that'll last me half a day. You know, that'll last me like two meals right there, boom, for $3.
It's vegetarian, too, which is good.
Yeah, lentils.
Good beans, good fiber.
Yeah, lentils are great. A whole paycheck for a few things. You know what happened?
As they would say in India, dal, right?
Dal. I guess, I don't know, there's so many languages in India, but I think dal's the main thing. But here's the deal with whole paycheck yesterday. I made out really well because... They had this policy they claimed where this is not the one in Cambridge, but they are the ones in Cambridge. They said they noticed my bag was ripped. It was an old Whole Paycheck bag from like years ago. They noticed it was ripped. They said, "We replaced the bag." I'm like, okay. They gave me a new bag. I'm not kidding. And then they're like, maybe it's because it had the name of their store on it. I don't know, but they gave me a new bag. And this is one of those bags with the stuff in it, so it stays cool. A little bit of thermal stuff. Yeah. And then I had taken this tomato. I could only afford two tomatoes from that place. So I got two tomatoes. And it was like a lot of money. And I'm like, those are not the kind of tomatoes I got. I was telling the truth. I said, I got these other kind that were cheaper. So they gave me the whole refund for the whole thing. How much? I don't think they're going to do that much longer, but I bet you they get rid of that one of these days. Because you go to Market Basket and you try to get a refund and they'll fight with you on the floor. They'll be like wrestling with them on the floor for the refund. We're not giving you a refund. Boom, boom. You know, I'm serious. I fight with them at Market
Basket.
I
worked in all these places. My first job after my first official, you know, payroll job was Market Basket.
Yeah.
And no discounts. Because it's already cheap enough.
You're
bang for your dollar there.
Yeah. Not true, actually.
Market Casket.
You know, the big secret for working people is, and we all know it, but the corporate media refuses to acknowledge it. A lot of upper middle class people don't notice it. But prices are going up. They've been going up like crazy while they claim inflation is low. It's a freaking lie. The prices have been going up. And then you get some of these articles where they actually say, college costs have gone up 500% in the last few years. Healthcare costs have gone up 300%. Yeah, no kidding, right? But then I'm saying also, that's horrible. But they don't talk about that usually in the corporate media. But on top of that, You have the costs of basics going up. You walk into Market Basket, you can easily spend a lot of money now. It's not like it was before, you know. And this is like a big secret. So they talk about the economy, and they usually say like 80% of the things you hear about the economy now in the corporate media is it's great, it's wonderful. Look at the stock market. Look at the low unemployment. You know, it's full employment. Lie. That's a lie. The inflation statistics, the unemployment statistics are cooked bad. You stop looking for work, you're no longer included in those statistics. You know, if you know, after a certain amount of time, you're no longer included in those statistics. If you go, I forget what the time frame is, but you lose your job, you get unemployment benefits for X number of time. Then once you're off that, you don't get counted. You don't get counted if you know, I don't think you get counted for certain reasons if you're unemployed, etc. So there's people that are not being counted. Millions of people.
You become void. You become a no one.
You're not in the statistics. So we have full employment, delete, quote unquote. But there are homeless people with no jobs, and there's people all over the place with no jobs. Then you have, especially like now with the age discrimination is a big thing. You're getting your 50s, your 60s, really hard to find a job if you lose a job. They don't talk about that too much. Now the other thing is that with the economy, I did hear this on one. It was like Marketplace on NPR, a pro-capitalist program, where they said everything seems to be going well in the economy, and yet consumers, I love that term, consumers are not going to spend as much this year for the holidays.
I heard the opposite.
So did I. Yes, that's true. But this is one that I heard they're going to spend less. And I'm like, no kidding. My guess is that I'm going to probably be proven wrong by overall statistics, but I think it's going to be skewed towards the upper middle class and rich. I think a lot of working class people like myself are going to, I remember I talked with my kids. I said, we're going to really go cheap this year. Hope you don't mind. And my daughter just isn't agreeing.
I told my mother, I was like, Merry Christmas. I love you. Yeah, you know, exactly. There you go. That's your present.
Right.
We're together. You know, we're still living.
I'll wrap my hugs in a bowl.
We have a roof over our head. Bah,
for
humbug,
now.
You know?
For now, yeah. But yeah, I think it's going to be a grinchy Christmas this year for most working people because as this show, anonymously, if that's the word, not anonymously, but as it said, like most shows aren't saying, this so-called economic show said wages are still flat, stagnant, going down for most people. So, and the raises that are out there are low. So that's not adding to, you know, with inflation, which is huge, which they didn't add that to inflation, they didn't connect that to inflation. It's really going to be hard to spend a lot of money. Debt is increasing. And I have an article, a devastating article about here about student loan debts, which we're definitely going to get to, but we're going to talk about something else in a minute. Things really, this holiday season, things suck for workers. Things suck. Let's just face the facts. And they're going to pretend it's all, you know, record number of Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales and all that.
It's time to become a real atheist. Yeah. Just forget about the whole Christmas thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm a real atheist. It's all but myth. I like having a pine tree in my house. I like that. I like giving gifts. I like, you know, pleasing my children. But here's the deal. They're not going to be as happy this time.
It's too commercialized.
Oh, very commercialized, yeah. But, you know, my kids are pretty good at not buying into the hype because we don't watch that much regular TV.
Yeah.
Although they're on screens for other reasons way too much. But it's not like every Christmas we're under huge pressure to get the latest gizmo or something, the latest trendy thing.
But we set
a high bar with like buying a lot of little stuff, you know. And I'm like, even that we're not going to do. And last year we bought a ping pong table, which was a huge item for us, right? And it cost $200-something. My brother-in-law set it up for free, so we don't have to do it. Because I can't do stuff like that. It's too hard.
Forrest Gump, the Chinese. Too hard. Chinese.
I'm really good at ping pong. I love it. It's a great sport. Now my son won't play it. He won't play it. So it was a waste of money. He just doesn't play. He refuses.
I'll stop by
yeah.
and play.
Yeah, you should. You should.
A couple rounds.
Definitely. I would love that. I would love that. Because it's like, I have no one to play ping pong with now, and we spent, for us, a ton of money on that. So this year I was like, hey, maybe we'll buy an air hockey table. Do you know how much those things cost?
No, do a billiards, like pool.
I don't like that much, but that's a good idea. But those are really expensive, too. You go for pool tables, you go for air hockey, you go for foosball tables, unless you get really, really cheap stuff.
Is that the soccer one?
Yeah, which my son would love that. But unless you go for, if you go for those things at any kind of decent like size and sturdiness, it's way too expensive. So I'm like, we're not doing that. Sorry. So now we're saving our money for the spring. We want to get a dog. get a puppy. Oh. That costs money. You got to go to the vet and everything.
Well, you can go and adopt one.
Still got to go to the vet.
Yeah.
Still got to spend $600, $700 on the vet and everything. So anyway, yeah, we're not going to spend the whole day, the whole show commiserating. But here's the problem, right? The corporate media is telling us everything is great. They've been doing that ever since the recession ended, supposedly, 2007, 2008 recession. But it's particularly galling around the holidays where, you know, you can't provide for your family the way you want to, and you see the conspicuous consumption by the upper middle class and the rich, and it's really a drag. Anyway, as I think we might have mentioned, we definitely talked about on other shows that there was a member of Socialist Alternative named Ginger Jensen out in Minneapolis who ran for city council as an open socialist, as a member of Socialist Alternative. If you voted, you saw on the ballot Ginger Jensen, Socialist Alternative. Now, why is this all important? Well, because we think there's a way as socialists to run for political office and win or lose, but, you know, helps to win, but win or lose, to further the cause of organizing for socialism. Some people on the left, they say, it's a rigged game, it's all rich people, forget about it. You know, it's all money that controls it. Well, of course, there's a grain of truth in that. Money does control politics in this country.
Yeah, but by that statement, they're defeatist and not fighting it.
Exactly, and you're seating.
It's like saying, okay, they win the day. You know,
exactly.
Just move on.
Exactly, and you're giving the whole field of battle on electoral politics, which takes form of national, local, state, all sorts of places, to the rich, to big business, the corporations, and their bootlickers. You know, and that's just not there. I mean, the history of the socialist movement, whether it's in Europe, Africa, Asia, United States, South America, wherever, is there is always a lot of socialists and Marxists who are engaging at that level of electoral politics. In fact, even those that don't engage at that level, they tried. You know, like a lot of guerrilla movements became guerrilla movements because when they tried to run for office. And I'm not defending guerrilla struggles. We think those are not the right tactic, but you can understand them. You know, people.
Yeah, like FMLN.
They ran for office and they got killed.
They're there.
In Colombia, what I'm saying is before that, right?
Yes.
Here's how it went. In a lot of countries, communist parties, socialist parties. I know you know this, but I'm just saying it to connect the dots. Communist parties, socialist parties get going like in the 50s and 60s, and right away they're just murdered, they're just shot down. Maoism comes from that. Maoism comes from a massacre in a 1925-26 revolution that was urban based. Based on the kind of socialism we talk about, democratic socialism, and so on, and they basically got massacred. So they felt like the only thing they could do was go up in the hills, including Mao, and conduct a guerrilla struggle, come back in, and you know, we don't agree with that strategy, but that's where that comes from. So it's not like people are like, yeah, let's go off to the jungle and form an army for nothing. You know, they're like they're persecuted and shot and murdered. Colombia
used to say, "Te vas a la montaña." That meant we're going to the mountains.
Yeah.
That's for refuge.
Yeah.
All right.
Based on violence. Based on abuse.
The army in El Salvador, once you turn 10, they will go literally to your school and read names. And it's like a hit and miss. Such and such. Line up. Such and such. And they take you and they train you. You got these little little kids, you know, running around, getting right-wing propaganda.
Right, right.
All that, you know. Fight the communists, da, da, da.
Mm-hmm.
They're your enemy.
Yep.
That's us. That's them. This is us. Yep. That kind of attitude.
Yep. Yep.
All these kids are running, going, you know, and of course the guerrillas give them refuge, but at the same time they become the new another army.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. And the point here, original point, is that we are trying to not give up that field of battle, so to speak, of electoral politics to the dictatorship of big business, that we will engage, even if we know we're not going to always win. And one of the reasons we're going to engage, because working people have fought and died, and I don't mean this like to be one of the like cliched veterans things you hear about so much now. I'm talking about regular army, but also non-regular army people, protesters, everybody, working people in general have died establishing the right to vote, defending the right to vote, and unfortunately it still is happening. People have to organize and down south, and there are many other places against incredible rules against voting that make it hard to vote, against often based in racism, obviously, and rules of gerrymandering rules that create these weird. I mean, have you ever looked at an electoral map? It's just silly. It's like looking at like Jell-O or like the streams that like if you took a paint thing and just splattered it, because what they're trying to do is carve out, you know, districts they'll know they'll win. It's Democrats and Republicans that do this, mostly Republicans, but also Democrats. They'll carve out districts they know they'll win based on race, based on class, based on, you know, whatever, income, even, you know, just basic stuff, and basic evil stuff in the inequality in the United States. And they will then say, oh, we had an election and we won. You know, and who are you representing? You're representing almost no one, if you add that to the low voter turnout and all that. But here's another reason that socialists engage, not just because we don't want the corporate, because it's a way to organize, but also, and people have fought and died for this, we want people to vote as part of that continuation of the army. We actually want people to be used to voting, not voting for Tweedledum or Tweedledee, or, you know, two sides of the same coin, the duopoly of the Republicans and Democrats. We don't want them to vote for that, but we want them to keep voting as a tactic, as a thing that we can do, because in the struggle for socialism, whether it's being part of a socialist movement or being in a union or a community group, we have to have democracy. We need as much democracy as we can carve out of this undemocratic system and have people used to voting. And then if we achieve socialism, we really need to learn how to vote. We really need to double down on that, and you're going to be voting on things you never thought you could vote on before. Food, housing, how to grow education. The food. Yeah. Where's this going?
Workplace.
Yep.
What? I have a say in a workplace? Yes.
Yeah, it's not just the bosses anymore. Or, but a say in the region. Like, should we really take the resources of this region and let the let the pipelines through or not? Should we really let the nuclear power plants continue to exist? Should we really let big developers buy up all the land and make housing on it? You know. Instead of can we control how the housing is going to be built and what we really need and how, you know, public ownership of the housing, of housing building, all sorts of permutations that we just don't even think of now, because the economy, which is the main thing that human beings exist under, the main, I don't want to say institution, but the main system, how we, you know, basic survival, you know, food, shelter, clothing, that sort of thing, that is not controlled democratically under capitalism. You want to know about socialism? Just think about that for a second.
Oh, my grandfather summed it up. He used to always tell me, socialism is the opposite of what capitalism is. Socialism is, imagine you want to go to work. Imagine you want to go to school.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. Sum it up.
Yep.
Why? Because
imagine you're in control.
Are in control. You are in control, not them telling you, dictating how things are going.
Imagine you're in control. There you go.
Yep. Teaching you a mishistory, not a history, a mishistory. You almost say a mishistory, meaning their history.
Yep.
They're telling lies, basically.
Yep. Famous quote by Marx. We've mentioned the show before. The ruling ideas of any age are the ideas of the ruling class. So in our time, those are the ideas, the myths, etc., of the capitalist class. You know. People like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and Trump and the Koch brothers, they all are spending a lot of money right now on education. And it's no accident. Education for them means propagating the values of capitalism.
You know how they talk about, Trump and Hillary are going at it? And this, I don't know if it's true, but there was a picture with them playing golf a couple weeks ago together.
No, I don't think so. That must have been a satire.
But I wouldn't.
In the past, it happens. It's happened.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I wouldn't doubt it. It's like they're in the same league.
Yeah.
You
know, there was stuff around the time of the election before, and some listeners will say that's the fake news Russian stuff, but no, it was real. Where they dug up old pictures of the Clintons and the Trumps socializing. I think it was back in the 90s, but there it was. Yeah, no, they're the same class. And it's sad in America we have to educate ourselves as working people about basic social class. And a lot of people still don't get it. You can talk about it till you drop dead. They're not going to get it. But a certain number of people will, through conditions, unfortunately. More inequality, the more obvious it becomes that there are social classes in America. What we're lacking in America, really, I mean, a lot of people internationally, politically, they think Americans are stupid. It's tempting to say that because of the people voting for Trump, but look at other countries. They voted for Berlusconi in Italy. They voted for Sarkozy in France. They vote for these neo-Nazis in some of these countries. So it's not that Americans are stupid, not at all. Americans can be quite intelligent, just like any people. But what we lack in America is the recent memory of any sort of big or mass workers' party, communist, socialist, labor, whatever you want to call it, that is independent from the corporations, from big business. So as long as the Democrats and Republicans control the show, we're going to have very low class consciousness. You know, very, very low. You'll have people that will say, good activists that are totally wrong, that will say, all we can do is be in the Democratic Party, help the Democratic Party fight, for the Democratic Party. And they get stabbed in the back. They get disappointed. They get burned out. They get they become their enemy. They become part of this elite of the Democratic Party, et cetera. It's a dead end. It's a dead end historically over and over and over again. And then you get people that are not that are also activists or also politically whatever, who will do really stupid things like vote for Trump or something because they want to shake things up, or vote for the Republicans because the Democrats are the only game in town. And like look at the illusions in Baker, Charles Baker. You know, in another country, he'd be laughed out of the park as a representative of the bourgeois, of the super rich.
We met him.
Here they call him Charlie. Here they call him Charlie, and they try to paint him as a man of the people. Well, Charles Baker is our enemy, our class enemy, and he ran a corporation making money off sick people, the Harvard Pilgrim. Vanguard, Harvard Pilgrim, well, yeah. Whatever it was before. It keeps getting bought up by bigger and bigger companies. Concentration of capital is go read Marx, go read anything by Marx. Concentration of capital is a law of capitalism, and it happens over and over again in the system, and it leads to incredible concentrations of wealth and power. And even if they're broken up for a short time, they reemerge that way. But yeah, we met Charles. Charles thought the minimum wage was fine where it was.
Fine where it is.
Because Charles eats a nice dinner every night. You know, Charles Baker. Next time someone says Charlie Baker, just say, no, it's Charles. It's Charles. Charles Baker. Just so they know. Just so maybe it gets in their head a little bit. Oh, yeah, this guy's kind of weird. He's bourgeois. Yeah, he's upper middle. He's upper class. Yeah. Totally. Not upper middle class. He's like capitalist.
He's got a mansion somewhere.
He's a capitalist. There's a capitalist running the state.
Mansions.
And they think there's a democracy. What working person in their right mind would vote for a capitalist?
He was in Florida when we had that big storm, I think.
Which one?
Charlie, that big one. The big one that, like, it was compared to, 2015 when that real big.
Sandy?
No, the snowstorm that we had, the northeastern that we just kept on getting all these snowstorms.
Yeah,
usually
they trot out the governor and the mayor to tell everyone it's okay that their streets aren't plowed and everything. Yeah. It's okay if
just
you don't
stay
have
out
power.
Of the streets.
Do you see how many people were out of power recently?
I'm on my SUV. I just plowed right through it.
Did you see how many people were out of power recently in Maine and from that storm we had? It wasn't even that bad a storm, Maine. New Hampshire, there were people out of power for weeks.
Even up here. My the guy who's the manager, his house, he lives over by the Western Metro area.
West End in Boston?
No,
West End,
the suburbs. Like
Metro West.
Metro West.
That's where I live, yeah.
And his power went out because a tree hit his line, and then they had to replace the whole thing. And
But how long? He's probably only out for a day or so.
A week.
A week. Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
They had to redo the whole.
You know what happens with a week and a half? All the food you bought, and this is a couple $100 for a family.
Family had to go to grandfather's house.
But wait a minute. The food in the refrigerator, the freezer is gone. They never pay you back for that. I've been through a million storms where we've had to throw out. I haven't been through a million storms, and I'll tell you why. Because when I was a kid. And electricity.
This is New York, right?
Yes. It's connecting New York and around there. When I was a kid, and the power companies were publicly owned and heavily regulated. They were municipally owned and heavily regulated.
Is that the
Edison? It was a lot better. Yep.
Edison.
It was all one thing, and it was a lot better. And
just things, hospitals,
public. Exactly. Nursing homes, you name it. Everything we're paying for now, you didn't pay for, or you paid a lot less. So, of course, you paid for electricity, but you paid a lot less. It was regulated. Phones were regulated, et cetera. Now they've convinced everyone, it's good not to be regulated if prices are cheaper. They're not cheaper. They're cheaper for 2 seconds. Then they go up way beyond what they were before. So now we have huge prices for electricity and horrible quality. And by the way, Eversource, the ripoff company that I spent a lot of money on every month for nothing. We had two little window air conditioners going during the summer off and on. And all of a sudden, our electric bill jumped like you wouldn't believe. $200 a month. because we have too little air. What do people do with central air? What do people do with you know, real power generating that for some reason, you know? They must be paying $300-$400, you know? So anyway, Eversource, ripoff. They're getting sued. They're getting sued. Eversource is getting sued right now, along with another company, for huge price increases.
National Grid's another one.
That's not the one being sued, though. It's another one. Sorry, I don't know the name of it. But they're suing them right now for huge price increases that apparently there's still some little regulation out there that says they can't just jack up the prices to whatever they want. You wouldn't know it, but apparently that's out there. Anyway, back to the engaging on electrical political plane or level or whatever, despite the control of people like Charles Baker and his ilk over the political system, there is enough room that has been fought for and won to barely enough room, and in some cases not, but to actually get money from unions, get money from community groups, get money from working people themselves, and run a campaign that might win. And we proved that in Seattle twice. Shama Sawant, member of Socialist Alternative, won in an election for city council in 2013, was reelected in 2016 by a wider margin. And I helped with it. I was out there for a week helping with the campaign in 2016, and I can attest to the fact that it was an amazing, brilliant thing where you'd actually have people talking about socialism. They'd invite you into their apartments, talk about socialism. Not kidding. I mean, it's talking about the campaign, but it got really quick into socialism. And that's what you can do also. You can use the campaign. Campaigns as a platform to organize from.
Educate, organize,
you know, and of course, to fight for real demands. So in Shama's case, we won in Seattle a $15 minimum wage law, the first in the country in a major city that came out of the Shama Sawant campaign. And there were a lot of other forces involved, but we initiated it and we led it in Seattle. And won it, and helped win it, you know, and it was huge. And it would have been even better law. It's a good law, but it would have been even better if the Democrats hadn't got their hands on it. What the Democrats are doing now is, they've got a formula now for all the cities where minimum 15 has worked its way in. They kind of oppose it up until the point that they can't anymore. That's just inevitable. It's going to go through. Then they jump in and try to claim credit for and control over it, and because they dominate the even in Seattle, where we have one socialist, Shama Sawant, one member of Socialist Alternative, the Democrats dominate the city council, they put in things to weaken the law. They're always out there to give crap to big business. Always there. They're the best friends of big business. Don't let anyone tell you any different. Big business is pouring tons of money in the Democratic Party. They know who their friends are. So the Democratic Party does these things they call opt-outs, where a whole group of workers will get a pass, won't have to get the $15 hour minimum wage. They'll extend the time of implementation of the law for years. You know, like it should be. Our campaign was called 15 Now. Their campaign is 15 as long as we can delay it. You know, under overwhelming pressure to have to do something, and then they have the gall to say they're responsible for it, right? Even though it was mass movements on the street that we helped lead, that got it going through the campaign initially. And then we launched 15 Now right after the first campaign. I was there for that. The results were in, about a month or less goes by, we're launching 15 Now publicly. Now, that's just happened in Minneapolis, where Socialist Alternative launched a 15 Now campaign a couple years ago. Not that long ago, really, at all. Starting with the airport workers, because there's been other groups that have done really good work around airport workers' rights. And so basically working in an airport used to be a good thing. Used to be a union job. Used to be a job where, you know, you got high paid and so on. Along with deregulation of airlines started by Carter and Kennedy and all the liberals back in the Carter, around the Carter administration, Ted Kennedy. They deregulated airlines, and that was really an attack on unions mostly. And when the smoke cleared, basically, you had, as you know, as many people know that file this stuff, a big shakeup in the airline industry with a lot of deregulation and a lot of deunionization. So people that are doing really hard work, like the baggage handlers, they used to be unionized, make good money, relatively speaking. Now they're making crap, and they're not union. So a lot of the 15 stuff is focused in different cities, some of which we're not directly involved in, but we support, of course, like in Atlanta and other places. $15 minimum wage, they started with the airport workers. they didn't get it in certain areas, but they try to, you know, that's where there's a lot of workers, and it's hard to move that work overseas. It's not like a manufacturing plant where
I'd be scared, you know, if they did that.
Well, how could they? How could they? The plane's got to fly out of there. Someone's got to take care of it. So there's certain industries that are more immune to being sent overseas.
And then is it me, or is it like after 9/11, the serving meals thing on the airplane?
Gone.
As far as in America.
Gone.
I didn't gotta say international.
Got to pay for it.
That's why I'll take Air Canada any day over it.
Well, yeah. No, you're right.
Because it's like you go to Aer Lingus, Air Canada, SATA, whatever. You know, international. Lufthansa. You're going to get in coach, you're getting a meal.
Yep.
I mean, good meal.
But here's the thing.
Here it's like, oh no, you got to pay for it. No, it's a menu here.
I would guess, I could be wrong, but I would guess that's even changing in the international airlines. I would guess. I could be wrong. I don't fly that much, but yeah. So the point is that starting at the airport and moving on, it became very popular in Minneapolis within the last few years, this $15 minimum wage thing, to the point where it was polling at 60, 64, 65%. That's huge. Polls usually, people are unfortunately bombarded with a lot of propaganda and get confused against their own interests, and they'll, you know, I don't like $15 an hour. The businesses can't afford it. Yeah, well, yes, they can. Easily. Do you ever think that maybe a business could take lower profits, or a boss could take a lower salary, or bosses? Of course they can. And businesses are often, there's no such thing as a business where the money keeps increasing at the same rate or an increasing rate at all times. Every business has times where even under capitalism, where the rate of profit falls, aggregate profit falls, because of fluctuations in demand, fluctuations in costs, things that they can't fix, costs like machinery breaking down or something, or like raw materials they need. And they're always messing with the workers to try to make sure they screw us as badly as possible to pay the lowest wages possible. But in some places that you know, to actually have workers walk in the door and survive, they got to pay a certain wage. They've got taxation, although they get out of most of that. But you know what I mean? There's different variables. All I'm trying to say is there's a lot of different variables that hit whether or not a business is continuing to make tons of money. So they take little dips in their profits here and there. They can take a dip for 15 easily. And in fact, it's been shown businesses, it depends on all the stuff I was just talking about. Like, is the business growing? Is their market share growing? All that stuff. They can absorb 15 and still make hyper profits. You know?
Yeah, well, the problem now,
15 doesn't make or break businesses.
More buying power. It's just like,
that's true too. That's true too. 15 doesn't.
Like if you want a population impoverished, they're not going to, eventually, your business is going to go. Because they're not spending as much.
Right, that's right, that's right.
Even if you want to look at it in their terms, even though I don't agree with it,
right?
Because they're capitalists and I am what I am. I'm a socialist slash communist. So that's what I am.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I believe in a flip-flop the whole society in its head. But
me too, yeah.
I'm also I look at reality for what it is. But even in their reality, they don't see that. It's like they're so driven by that greed.
I agree. And they don't want it to spread either. Like, say they're in a business that could absorb 15, and there are many of them that could absorb 15 easily. They don't want a victory for workers in any sense, in any way, because then workers will want something else and something else, something else. Which we should. We deserve the world.
We run. At that point, they're gonna introduce fascism.
Yeah, the work of working people.
See how that happened in World War II.
Well, it got defeated eventually, but you know, we work. We do the work. We deserve the spoils. We deserve the result of the work, and we don't get it. And that's the basis of the labor theory of value of Marxism.
Labor creates
basically
wealth.
Yeah, labor creates all wealth. You can take Bill Gates and say, bye-bye, Bill, go retire, and Microsoft will continue. You can take any of these bosses and say later, you know, and as long as they're not able to take significant capital with them.
Joe Mackey,
as long as they're not able to take machinery with them, as long as they're not able to take workers with them, then the company will continue under capitalism. And if it fails under capitalism, it starts to fail, bring it under public ownership, you know. That's one of the things we put forward in other countries through the group that we're in political solidarity with, the Committee for Works International. There have been times where we were influencing national programs and national, you know, in political parties, socialist parties and so on, labor parties, and saying, look, try to get through demands, which sometimes we did, that if a company shows it's not profitable and it wants to close or move, we should take it under public ownership.
That's what happened in Argentina in 2001-ish, 2003.
That's what they say. They say it did. I don't have much proof, but I think some of it happened.
But that is where, you know, what we're getting at is that, hey, if he wants to leave, go ahead. But no, his equipment's staying here. We're taking over.
The jobs.
This is a co-op.
The jobs, the resources are much more important than any individual's greed.
Yeah. And then once he's seen this guy, there was this one documentary that talked about that, where the guy came back and fought hard to get back his, because he's seen that these guys are actually, oh, my factory's back and running. That's mine. That's my machinery. That's my, well, it wasn't yours early when you wanted to go to China or someplace.
Yep.
All of a sudden, because you see them actually prospering.
Yep.
Your equipment is going, and they're actually succeeding, and
that's another thing. People don't understand that, and again, it's not their fault. They're not taught this, but a lot of businesses stop, close down, not because they're losing money, because the capitalists that run them decide there's a more lucrative path for their investments, for their money. You know, their rate of return will be much better if they go to a country in like Vietnam or China or wherever and have production costs be a lot less due to lower wages and government subsidies to create that whole situation, right? Like no environmental laws, all that kind of stuff. So that's not because the old factory was losing money. It's because they're trying to compete with other companies and or, even if they have a monopoly, they're trying to make more profit for themselves. So it's not like they were losing money necessarily. It's not like they were going out of business necessarily. They just have decided. And that's the problem of capitalism. One of the main problems is they are deciding where social production, they're making decisions about social production that should be made by the people, by the workers, and by working people in general. Those decisions are way too important to be made on the basis of individual greed, or the greed of a collection of a dozen CEOs, you know? Much more important than that, you know? Also, by the way, that argument about raise the living wage, you raise the spending power of workers, is absolutely true. But the way a capitalist looks at it is that section of that might not be the section of the workforce that they're selling to, or they might have to then pay that much money for their own workers, and they don't want to, again, to increase their profits and their individual gain from those profits and so on. So there are ways that capitalism works that doesn't work for society, but in its own under its own terms propels it to do evil things. Like, you can be the nicest person in the world, you become a head of a corporation, you're going to do bad, rotten things to the environment, you're going to do bad, rotten things to working people. And that's all there is to it. You can exploit the crap out of workers. If there's a big corporation, it's going to actually make money and survive competition, and you're going to also wreck the environment like it is. Remember that? I've used this example before. There's a movie called The Corporation. Might have been the one you were talking about a minute ago. And The Corporation was this film that purported to...
It's a documentary.
Purported to criticize or discuss and criticize the very nature of corporations. As it went on, it became clear really quick it was a liberal movie. I hated it for that. But anyway, so it didn't really criticize that much, and they had a hero. Their hero was a carpet manufacturer, a rug manufacturer, a big one.
I've seen that. And the guy was like, I read the book, and I just went, you know?
Yeah, so this guy
I'm destroying. He even admitted how I'm destroying this. How I am destroying... Whoa!
That's what I was going to mention.
I said, wow, you're actually admitting.
But he's considered a sympathetic figure in the context of the film, right?
Yes.
And at the end of the film, after they've tried everything, because he's cooperating. He's saying, yes, I will do everything I can to make my company environmentally sustainable and green and blah, 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 all that happy talk that the liberals like so much. So we're going to do that, and we'll see. No, we're going to do that. We're going to succeed. I mean, there's like the ex-CEO of Whole Foods. Remember all the pro-capitalist mythology he would put forward? We're different, all that. He just got bought up.
Capital.
You're nothing,
conscious
man.
Capitalism.
yeah. You're nothing. You just got bought out. That's the common thing under capitalism.
Did I tell you what happened when he had those books out and he came out and we had him everywhere?
No one bought him.
No.
I hope not.
Some individual in my store came in, a customer,
oh, no.
Took one out, right? put it on like some shelf,
yeah,
and put up Das Kapital right in front of it.
Oh,
and it was
so
there
great.
For an hour.
Oh my God.
And then somebody took the bus key. I don't know what it was. Some customer's like, you know, you have a Das Kapital for sale. Is that how much is that? He said, no, that's not. I don't know why is that doing there. So
we're
not doing the dollar thing because sometimes we'll do like these used books and sell them for $1 raise for like the children's hospital, something like that.
This is the greatest
story. Put that here. Oh, no, no. I'm going to check the cameras.
Oh, this is the greatest story I've ever heard. Are you kidding me?
I said, oh, my God. Who did that? No, I think some guy.
That's great.
Customer just said,
I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that.
Extra.
Let's all do that. Let's all do that, man.
But this is when he had his books out there. So now it's not.
No, no. They'll have other books. They'll have other books. They'll have other books. They always do that. That's what I'm saying. There's a mythology propaganda about capitalism. The way it works is completely different. But get back to the corporation. So the hero, quote unquote, who they like, the liberals like that made the film, He implemented the things they wanted him to implement for to be less exploitative and have green technology and all that. And you know what happened at the end of the film? They actually admitted, thank goodness, because liberals will lie a lot. They actually admitted that it only made 20% of his company sustainable. So 80% of his manufacturing process
was still
polluting the crap and destroying the environment. So that will lead, of course, liberals to say, well, that's just the way it is. We can never have sustainable technology and sustainable manufacturing. That's completely wrong. The minute that you free up the productive forces from capitalism, there'll be, and even before that, there's technologies that could be used, but if they're too expensive to implement, they won't do it. You know, if they consider them an unnecessary cost, they won't do it. They won't put it in there, you know? Like right now, there's plenty of companies there. They're using coal and oil to fuel their operations. They will not put up, you know, wind, solar, geothermal, whatever else is out there, all the other ones, to run their operations, because that would be a big retooling that would cost a lot of money. So, and you extrapolate that throughout an entire economy, and you got most of the economy not doing that. And the climate change. See, you should be able to say to the world, to the people of the world, the following phrase: climate change. And then the next sentence should be, this is why we're all socialists. Because there's no way you're going to stop the environmental destruction of the planet, or at least for human habitation, through an unplanned economy. And the essence of socialism is a democratically planned economy on an international scale. That's the essence of socialism. And to get to that point will require an incredible political movement, require a revolution. The capitalists will not give up that control over the means of production, distribution, etc. They won't do it. Now, does that mean there's no green technologies anywhere being implemented? No, there are. This is part of the contradiction of capitalism. They can make some money out of green technologies here or there. You know, it's like that old joke about the capitalists will sell you the rope that you'll hang them with. You know, there are capitalists will do things against their own interest to make a buck, right? But you got to look at overall what's going on. And overall what's going on is they fight tooth and nail, propagandistically, organizationally, politically, in their own corporations, et cetera, to maintain control over the means of production of what's going to be produced, how it's going to be produced, and how it's going to be distributed, right? That's what they do. And it's in their material interests to do that. So to overcome that is not a question of going up to an individual capitalist like they did in the corporation and saying, be nice, because he was nice and he failed, you know? I mean, that goes back throughout if our listeners actually engage, and some of them have, obviously, engage with Marxism and really learn about the system of capitalism, because that's how you learn about it, through Marxism, you'll see that there were benevolent capitalists towards the beginning of capitalism, like David Owen and so on, who said, consciously, I'm going to try to be a good capitalist. So Owen instituted a 10-hour workday at a time when 14-hour workdays were common, 16-hour workdays. Owen instituted schooling.
Is that what the Owen Knight?
David thing? Owen. David Owen, I believe his name was.
But he was still talking about this.
Etc. It lasted a very short time. Owen continued. He became a labor counselor or something. He became he tried to stay progressive as an individual, but he lost that complete economic power because it doesn't work.
The system itself gobbled capital.
Yeah, exactly. It's like with co-ops. Right now, there's a guy popularizing Marxism now, Richard Wolff. And he's got some good analysis, but at the end of every analysis or towards the end, he's always talking about worker co-ops. Worker co-ops.
Worker enterprises or something like that.
And he's talking about, and other czars as well, hollowing out capitalism through successive worker co-ops. It doesn't work. It's never worked. The minute you get a successful worker co-op going, you're surrounded in a hostile sea of capitalism that devours you. It's a tsunami. It just goes over your operation. And two things happen. Either you go out of business as a co-op, or you become a business. And that's certainly happened. And like Mondragon, the one they talk about in Spain. Harvest, oh yeah, that's a joke. But you know, like a lot of anarchists will talk about the Mondragon co-op in Spain. That place functions like a business. They've laid people off. They've polluted the environment. They've done all sorts of you know, things that other corporations do to survive because they're in the capitalist system. So that doesn't say that we're against co-ops. We just see their limitations. If someone wants to set up a co-op as a step towards, you know, as a temporary, like say a corporation is going to go under and you somehow get together the resources and organization to form a co-op and you can't get the government to take it over. Then, yeah, co-op as long as you can. But don't have illusions in it. And you might as well, and don't spend all your time on it. You know, you got to spend some of your time on organizing socialism on a wide scale instead of little islands of socialism that will get tsunamied.
Now, in a transitional period, let's say a society, let's say tomorrow, we start going towards socialism.
Yep.
Would co-ops be that tool to transitionalize us to the society of socialism?
I don't think so, because it's going to be mostly a political fight. So what would be the tool would be something like the Soviets, the big workers' councils, peasants' councils, and so on. And then they would take under public ownership the big things they needed to, land, factories, mm-hmm. whatever. So and to get the kind of resources you need to actually democratically run and plan a national but also international system of democratic socialism, you would need major resources. You can't leave it up to little islands of co-ops. Would, though, here's maybe your point, would some of the local organizations look like co-ops or whatever? Like yeah, possibly. But what happened in the Soviet Union, for an example, and also at other times, like in Italy and other places when there was a huge strike waves and stuff, mm-hmm. the local factories would set up things like factory committees, and very quickly they would move beyond that one factory. Or they would set up, or like in Russia, Soviets, that would, like you would, your factory would have representation on the local Soviet, the local workers' council. So once right away you're integrated into that, I can't see wanting to stay isolated. And that could be detrimental. What if a co-op, a little anarchist grouping, took over a co-op in a key sector of a local regional economy, right? They've got the co-op of the electric grid in Worcester or something, right? And but we need that electrical grid to integrate, you know, the electricity that we're now doing through solar and wind and everything. Yeah. Oh no, we like it the way it is. Blah blah. No, wait a minute. You're part of this whole thing. No, we're not. We're just a little co-op, independent co-op. Yeah. You're not independent.
This, they start becoming the antagonistic element of a transition.
They probably have illusions in capitalism, actually. A lot of anarchists, when you get below the surface, they have illusions in small-scale capitalism.
So co-op just means us from that situation going back to capitalism.
Yeah, or just trying to hold on to it when we're jumping way beyond it.
Look at China today. All these, we were communists. We had all these. I mean, was it better under Mao? Was it better now? Which...
Well, China's really complicated because you have the head of the government there using Maoism and communist-sounding language to... And there's good material, by the way, on this on socialistworld.net and chinaworker.info or chinaworker.org. These are sites from the Committee for Workers International. Very good information saying what's really happening in China, despite all the like weird propaganda that comes out of it. Mm-hmm. So part of the propaganda that some sections of the left are like holding on to desperately is that China still has this nominal Communist Party, and the head of the Communist Party now is talking about Maoism and stuff and leftism. But the reality is it's sort of the way Stalinists used to use the Bolshevik Revolution, the 1917, to maintain their power. You know, they would use the iconography. They would create iconography. They'd create statues where the Bolsheviks didn't want that and the movement didn't want that. They'd create statues. They create myths. They do all this stuff to say they're still linked to that initial revolution and the way it was developing.
Lenin
but they
would not
weren't.
Approve
they
his
weren't.
Statue.
No, not at
everywhere.
All. Not at all. No. Mm. So they created a myth, even as they were rewriting and redoing all the stuff that was gained. You know, like for example, the Russian Revolution. Right after the Russian Revolution, all sorts of repressive laws were eliminated. You know, laws against homosexuality, against LGBTQ people, laws against all sorts of social behaviors. The Bolsheviks, yeah, exactly. The Bolsheviks and the Soviets got rid of that, those laws, and created a lot more individual freedom, the opposite of what the conservatives will tell you or whatever. And but when the Stalinists came in, they started to rewrite all that, bring back all the repressive laws, because they were resting on the old remnants of the old regime to gain power.
Czarist.
Well, what was left of that, yeah. And then they were, at the same time, trying to fool the people into thinking they're still putting forward the revolution. So, but instead of internationalism, they started to put forward socialism in one country. Instead of united fronts in different countries where the communists would openly work, they put forward popular fronts, let the liberals run the show. They put forward the two stages theory. You have to get a certain level of capitalist development before you have a revolution. Not true. You know, look at Russia. Russia was not that developed in terms of capitalism. It wasn't. It was contradictory. And the Bolsheviks never said, no, we don't need a socialist revolution. You know what I mean? So Stalin started to rewrite the basic things about Marxism and socialism. At the same time, though, claimed they were doing it under the banner of the revolution of socialism and Marxism. Mao, that's what's happening in China right now. You have the leader of the Chinese Communist Party making noises about Maoism and stuff. Do you know how many billionaires there are in the Chinese Communist Party now?
53.
There you go.
Am I right? 53?
Probably. I don't know. There's a lot.
I know it's
I thought you were right. I thought you were right.
It's a small number.
That's not a small number. The leadership of the country, billionaires?
53.
That's a lot. I don't know. I'm just saying there's billionaires on the leadership of the so-called Communist Party in China. Mm-hmm. And if you just look at anything about the economy in China, yes, there's still a big state sector, but they run it like it's a big, like they're businesses. And then there's businesses that are not part of the state sector. They're huge. And they're and there's billionaires and millionaires running those. You have a capitalist class in China now. China is state capitalist because there's still, because of that state sector, because of things they do to try to engineer the capitalist economy there, there's more of a state overreach than in other places. Although there's a lot of capitalist countries where there's a lot more, including the United States, a lot more state direction and engineering in the economy than is admitted. But in China, it's huge still, yes. But doesn't make them any sort of communist. They're basically state capitalist because their capitalism is flourishing there, so-called, nationally and in terms of international ties. You can repatriate capital from China to other countries. You can repatriate profits from China to other countries. You know what I mean? It's not like it was under Maoism where there was no market. You know, there was no market for capitalism internally or externally. You know, it was all, you know, production based on state control, unfortunately, not democratic workers' control through a state or whatever. So it's changed drastically, and yet you still have people on the left saying somehow this is some sort of communist thing. It's not at all. It's a capitalist thing. It's more and more capitalism in China, you know, not less. And there was a time not so long ago when there wasn't any.
I mean, look at Shanghai. It put New York City to shame as far as how much buildings are you out.
Yep. Yep, and the inflation in the housing market there. And just to be able to talk about markets in that way,